There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin. Greg, here we are talking about things in the fall.
Yep.
Because it is the fall. Mm-hmm. A couple things happen in the fall.
Yeah.
Pumpkin spice lattes come back at Starbucks.
Yeah, they started that early too.
I think they started
pre-fall.
Yeah, like early August maybe.
Yeah.
But they're delicious, by the way, but
yeah,
you got to be really careful with those ones.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Why? Caloric?
Yeah, they just, I mean, it's like you don't want to have a pumpkin spice latte every day. I mean, it would taste good, but you'd... Yep. Your body would change quite a bit.
Understood.
Yeah. The other thing is back to school, of course, right?
Yeah.
And we both have kids that are in school.
We do.
Both have kids that are now in university, actually.
Yes.
And so...
Not only in university, but not living at home.
Yeah.
University elsewhere.
Yes. Living is... Is your daughter in res?
No.
No, she's in a condo.
She's in an apartment with some friends, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't remember that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as you know, my daughter just started her first year university.
I do know.
And she's in res. And yeah, it is. So actually, we could have talked about empty nest syndrome too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Because all of a sudden, things are quiet at the house, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But we want to talk about funding those educational years.
Yeah. No, for sure. And, you know, and it's a big change in a, and a, mm-hmm. and a big expense to, you know, to hit you all at once. And so there's, I don't know what your experience will be. My experience has been that you can pretty much count on it costing about $20,000 a year for a kid going to university in Canada. You know, and that's with, you've got tuition, probably $8,000 to $10,000 a year. You've got accommodations, could be $8,000 a year. There's textbooks and, you know, living expenses and all that kind of thing. So you can pretty much count on $20,000 a year, and more, of course, if there's, you know, if you're going into some professional programs and things. But I'm thinking general studies. That's probably a reasonable number to expect.
And what about, do you provide some form of allowance to your daughter that's going to university, or is she funding it herself?
Well, in terms of through the RESP, which we'll be talking about, of course, you know, that generally pays for tuition. Mm-hmm. And other expenses. And then, yeah, she does have an allowance, but she works every summer, makes pretty decent money in the summer. So she certainly earns all of her spending money.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's not like my daughter. She spends all of her earning money.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. No. And well, in our case, you know, she earns money in the summer that sort of funds all of her, I'd say, lifestyle expenses. I've agreed to cover, you know, tuition and accommodation and food, and not anything else that she might imbibe or otherwise enjoy.
You mean the fun things of university?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, but everybody's different, you know, and I think that's the thing. Like, so when we talk about, you know, funding post-secondary education, you know, we always talk about it maybe wrongly. Some people might have different ways of approaching it or not be able to, you know, help fund their kids' education. And so many people have to look at funding their own education, you know, young kids. And so I thought maybe we'd just take a look at some of the ways that university or post-secondary gets funded by, you know, by everybody.
Sure.
So one thing that I know I took advantage of when I was going to university, I don't know if you did, but student loans.
Oh, yeah, I took student loans.
Yeah.
Not only did I take them, I didn't pay them back.
Oh, good for you. Hopefully, if anyone at the CRA or is listening,
Oh no, they just became a debt consolidation.
Oh,
loan
there you go.
Later in life.
Oh, okay.
But yeah,
there's lots of government student aid available, and it's available for part-time and full-time students. Mm-hmm. And the way these loans work, and it hasn't changed since I took student loans many years ago, is that you don't have to. There's no interest earned or calculated, and there's no payments required while you're still in university.
Yeah.
And once you graduate, there's a grace period. I believe in Alberta, it's 12 months for Alberta loans and 6 months for federal government loans, but there's a grace period before the payments are required to be started.
Yeah.
I can tell you that when I went to university, my student loans, when I had to start paying them back, I had to pay $24 a month for 9.5 years. You know, now costs were a lot lower back then. So I think, unfortunately for for kids going to university these days, they're going to be a lot higher.
Well, but also with the student loans, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you have to qualify. There's an income qualification for student loans, right?
Not all of them. There are things called Alberta Student Grants, and those are available for low-income individuals. So there is an income test there. There's also Alberta Grants for students with disabilities. And so there are a number of different sources of funding, both with loans that need to be repaid and some of these grants which do not need to be repaid. And both available both by Alberta and Government of Canada. Mm-hmm. So for many, many people out there, they're going to have to self-fund their university. And for many people, that will require taking some form of student loans, and those are available.
Right.
The other things that are available, whether or not, your family is funding or you're funding yourself, but there's lots of scholarships, bursaries, and awards that are available. And those are essentially grants of money that do not need to be repaid. They're available from provincial governments. There's lots of school-specific awards, so the university you're applying to may offer scholarships or bursaries. And there's also community organizations that offer these things. And basically, in most of these cases, they're awarded based on academic achievement or academic excellence. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them are unknown to a lot of people, right?
They are. And you know what? It's interesting because when my oldest daughter was in school, I took the trouble, and she was going to Humber College in Ontario, and I took the opportunity to look into grants and bursaries and things, and there was dozens and dozens of them just in the program that she was in. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, depending on your program of studies, there may be all sorts of these kinds of scholarships and bursaries available that you know, people don't even know about.
And I mean, what's the harm in applying for them? I guess it's just taking the time to do it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. So that's kind of the self-funding approach to post-secondary. And then, there's the other ways of university or college gets funded are through personal savings and through other programs that your families can often set up for you. And so what we're talking about here are things like RESPs and TFSAs. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about RESPs for a minute, because they're probably the most common form of education savings that families might set up for their kids.
Sure. Well, and we take it for granted that people know what an RESP is.
Yep.
But I can tell you, in talking to people in the community or my daughter's friends, not everybody has an RESP set up.
That's right.
Not everybody knows what it is. And I'm just learning more about RESPs now because I was able to actually take some money out of the RESP for the first time. And
it's very exciting.
It was exciting to get some money back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then there's tax considerations that we'll talk about as well. So getting money back is great. But I think there's some interesting situations that we ran into early in the days of RESPs where some family members or parents of young kids would trade their RESPs like they would a trading account.
Yeah.
And if they were lucky enough to earn a lot of money inside the RESP, then, of course, the tax consequences to the kids, the beneficiaries of the RESP, can be substantial.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that as we go through. So basically, what's an RESP? So a Registered Education Savings Plan. And this is a program that was established by the government. When was that? I don't even remember, but it was late 90s?
Sure.
Okay, let's go with late 90s for now. And basically, it allows the holder of the RESP, the annuitant, so to speak, the opportunity to put money away for education for their child or grandchild. Mm-hmm. And that money, there's no tax deduction for making the contributions to the RESPs, but all of the money that is contributed to the RESPs is allowed to grow tax-free while it's in the plan. Mm-hmm. And the other thing which made things very interesting is that the government, there's something called the Education Savings Grant, and the government basically contributes up to 20% of the contributions that are made by the holder of the RESP up to a maximum of $500 per year.
Yeah.
So if you were to make a contribution of $2,500 to the RESP in any one year, the government throws in another $500. Mm-hmm. So you get...
Which then grows
tax-free for the life of the plan. You can contribute it into the RESP until the child turns 18. So basically, you've got 18 years of contribution room.
Oh, wait, though. I thought that you could contribute after 18, but you just don't get the grants anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We'll have to double check that. Yeah, yeah.
But typically, there are limits. And so the $2,500 contribution that would get you the maximum grant of $500, that's not a maximum of the contribution room available. In fact, you can contribute up to $50,000 mm-hmm. into, you know, for each beneficiary of an RESP.
Right.
And so some people may choose to do that all at once in the first year.
Yeah.
You know, if they, you know, have those funds available.
But the trade-off is that you don't get the grant.
The trade-off is you don't get the grant because it's only calculated on an annual basis and it's only, again, 20% up to a maximum of $500.
Yeah.
So then it becomes a trade-off for the contributor. Is it better to have all those years of tax-free growth on $50,000 or to have the $500 contribution every year?
Yeah.
And you could do the calculations and probably it's better to contribute $50,000 at once, but probably not practical for most people.
Yeah, I don't know too many of my friends when their kids were born.
No.
Let's say they had two or three kids, just had $100,000 or $150,000 just kicking around for education savings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the reality is most people will choose to contribute up to the maximum, you know, to get the maximum grant each year.
Yeah.
Which would be $2,500 a year, which still would give you a nice, you know, $36,000 or so worth of contributions over that period of time.
Well, and also, so if you can't afford, though, to contribute the full $2,500, there is a carry forward, right?
There is.
Yeah.
There is. And so the carry forward is essentially anything under $50,000 that you haven't invested yet.
Mm-hmm.
So So in any year, you know, you can contribute however much you'd like as long as you don't exceed $50,000 into the plan.
You know, I was reading also that there's additional grant money available.
Yep.
For lower income families.
That's correct.
Right? There's an extra 10 to 20%.
That's right. Yeah. And so that's something else that you can take advantage of with the RESP. Now, the maximum grant that can be earned is $7,200.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would equate to contributions of $36,000 per year. Okay. So that's how the contributions work. You know, the next phase is the withdrawal, which you've just mentioned. You've started that process, and there's a couple of factors around withdrawing money from an RESP. One is that the nature of the funds inside the RESP, there's kind of three different buckets, so to speak. There's the money that you contributed,
mm-hmm.
or the holder of the plan contributed, the money that the government threw in the forms of the education savings grant,
mm-hmm.
so let's say $7,200 at the maximum, and then the money that was earned on all of those investments over the time that, you know, that the RESP has been in force. And so when the money comes out, it comes out in two basic buckets. One is that, well, the contributions that you made can come out, there was no tax deduction for making those contributions.
It's like a return of capital?
It's a return of capital, that's right. So they call it PSE, the post-secondary education payments. Those are the contributions that you're withdrawing, and there's no tax on those.
Do you have to declare that when you do the withdrawal?
The administrator of the plan will do that.
Yeah.
Okay, and most people want to, well, let's talk about the second form of the withdrawal. So the one is basically the contributions, which we call the PSEs, post-secondary education payments. And then there's the EAPs, which is the education assistance payments. Okay, and those refer to the grants that the government provided and any income or interest that was earned on the funds in the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say you withdraw $10,000. When some portion of that is going to be considered a PSE, the return of your contributions, and the other will be considered an EAP, or the earnings.
Mm-hmm.
And the earnings are taxed to the beneficiary.
The kid.
So, the kid, exactly. So, and so if you take out $10,000 a year and use that to pay for tuition, that $10,000 is going to be taxed to the kid. And for the most part, you know, depending, you know, a lot of university students, they don't have a lot of earnings over the course of the year. Like, you know, if they have a summer job, they might make $8,000 or $10,000 or something in a summer. And then on top of that, which they will get a T4. And then on top of that, they will have the EAPs, or the education assistance payments from the RESP, which will add on to their income for the year.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, in my example, if the kid earns $10,000 in summer jobs and another $10,000 in EAPs from the RESP, then they'll have $20,000 of income for the year.
Yeah.
Now, the good news is that that's kind of the threshold for a university student not to have to pay any taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, the basic personal exemption is something over $15,000 right now. And then with tuition tax credits and things, you know, you can sort of work up to a point where about $20,000 of income is pretty much tax-free.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a good number to work towards, you know. So if you're managing this, depending on, you know, what your child is earning over the summer or what have you, you do need to be aware of it, because mm-hmm. what you don't want to do is, you know, pull out $30,000 and all of a sudden your kid is being taxed, you know.
Or maybe you do.
Or
because you want to punish them for spending all of your money.
It's always an option. That's yeah. right. The reality is, of course, in that scenario, you'd end up eating the tax anyway on behalf of your kid.
Yeah.
But it is a consideration, and that's why. So earlier, when I mentioned, well, some people would, you know, turn their RESPs into $1 million mm-hmm. or something through active trading and a lot of luck. Well, you know, you may have put in a maximum of $50,000, which means $950,000 of that coming out eventually is going to be taxed to your child,
right?
Or children.
And it's not taxed as capital gains, right?
No,
it's taxes earned income.
Earned income, absolutely.
Yeah, because we worked with a fellow years ago. He would always brag to me that he had a $2 million RESP.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. Like that. Firstly, congratulations on picking whatever it is you picked to get there.
Yeah.
Taking some concentrated risk.
Yeah.
It worked out. And I guess your kids are going to have a big tax bill.
That's right. You know, and so, you know, in the end, whether it's your tax bill or your kid's tax bill, it's just, you know, that's the kind of, if you're going to do that kind of trading, you'd probably want to keep that outside the RESP mm-hmm. and then pay to capital gains rates as opposed to income rates, you know, which are half. So mm-hmm. pay half the tax. So you do want to sort of think about, well, what is the RESP for? And what's the right investment strategy for the RESP, which is a good thing to talk to your advisor about, because they can sort of guide people like, I don't know, you, for instance.
Happy to have that conversation. Right. Yeah.
So now then the only other thing about RESPs is there are individual and family RESPs. And so you have, if you have one child, you might have you'll have an individual RESP. If you have two or three or more children, you can have a family RESP where each of them is named as a beneficiary, but the money doesn't have to go in or come out on a proportionate basis. Mm-hmm. And so as long as the grant, you know, the grant will be controlled. There's a maximum of $7,200, you know, per beneficiary. Mm-hmm. And then that grant has to be repaid. But beyond that, you don't have to pay money out in the same proportion even that it went in.
Yeah.
And so it gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of funding different, you know, different types of programs. You know, some may be in shorter programs and others might be in longer or more expensive programs, you know, professional schools and that kind of thing.
Wait, I just had a bit of a squirrel moment there.
Yeah.
So you've got a family RESP.
Yes.
With two kids.
Yep.
One kid is in school. One kid hasn't gone to school yet.
Yep.
What's the flexibility around how much can be used for each child?
Well, it's very flexible. I mean, you know, you could use all of the funds basically for one and none for the other if the other, you know, a child doesn't go to school. Mm-hmm. So I think there's and that's really the beneficiary of that kind of plan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, lots of flexibility there.
Well, let's talk about what if the child doesn't go to school, right? Because that does happen. Or maybe they go to some sort of vocational school. Like there are a lot of vocational schools that qualify for RESP withdrawals, but there are some that don't still, right?
That's right.
So if your child chooses a path that doesn't qualify and you've diligently saved all this money since they were born, do you, like I've got a list here of things that you can do, but do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, one thing you can do, of course, is in the worst case scenario, if there's no option to use the money to pay for post-secondary or some sort of education, even for yourself, which is an option, is that then The contributions can be returned without any tax consequence. Mm-hmm. Any of the accumulated income plus the grant money basically, essentially, can be withdrawn. The grant money has to be repaid mm-hmm. to the government, and then there's 20% tax on the amounts withdrawn, and then an extra 20% penalty.
Yeah.
But there are certain rules, maybe you have some of them there, under which you can get the money from an RSP or ESP, even if the child mm-hmm. doesn't go to to higher education.
Yeah, I mean, the only ones that I sourced was, as we talked about, you can transfer it to another child
yep.
in a family plan. You can keep the plan open for as long as 36 years.
Yes.
So even if you've got, like in our own family, our oldest is not in school. Mm-hmm. He's 21. But a lot can happen between 21 and 30.
Of course.
Right? And he might choose to go to school.
Yep.
So it can stay open for a long period of time. You mentioned you can transfer money. Oh, I don't think you mentioned this. You can transfer $50,000 to your own RSP.
Right.
If you have the room.
Yes.
And then I ran into this with a client who she funded a granddaughter's RESP, the full $50,000 right away.
Yep.
Problem is the son divorced. The daughter was actually the product of a marriage before his.
Okay.
And so she lost touch with the extended family.
Right.
And she was really on the hook. Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Like, how do I get this money back? What are the penalties? So, I mean, not to say that you need to plan for marital breakdown, but
no,
just know that things happen.
That's right. Yeah. And so it's important to understand the rules. And as you say, the fact that in a family plan, and if the beneficiaries don't go to university or post-secondary, there are opportunities even for the subscriber mm-hmm. to be able to use those funds if they're pursuing,
Yeah.
So continuing education.
If your daughter doesn't use all the funds, you're going to go back and get your PhD?
Going back to university.
PhD?
Why not?
Yeah. In what? Yeah. What would you do it in?
I don't know. Maybe genetics?
You're really hung up on this genetics
thing. I know. Yeah. I know. It's crazy. Old habits die hard. Yeah. So the last thing let's talk about is tax-free savings accounts because, even though, many students, start their post-secondary education when they turn 18, which is the first year that they can actually have a tax-free savings account, mm-hmm. it may not provide much opportunity for them in the early years. Mm-hmm. But if you think of somebody who goes on to postgraduate studies in their early or mid-20s, they may well have accumulated $20,000, $30,000 inside their tax-free savings accounts. And as we know, the beauty of the tax-free savings account is the money can come out tax-free. All of the money, earnings, there's no tax consequence, and if that money was put aside, in those earlier years, then it's a wonderful source of tax-free cash, to fund university.
Yeah.
So all of these, lots of different ways to fund education and lots of different considerations, but certainly, as we talked about at the beginning, encourage everyone to look at all options, all scholarships, bursaries, mm-hmm. grants, mm-hmm. Because why wouldn't you?
Well, I've often thought that we should have a bursary or a grant that we support.
Sure.
Right? Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, because you can, from a mathematical calculation, you can kind of figure out how much you as a person or a company or an organization, you can create your own grant, right?
Sure, you can.
And you can just mathematically calculate, I want to have this, $1,000 a year bursary.
Yep.
And you can figure out, how much do I actually have to put up as a stake
mm-hmm.
and then attach an earnings rate to it and have it self-funded.
For sure.
In perpetuity.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful thing to do. And certainly if you value education, you have the money to be able to do it. And there's probably very attractive tax consequences on top of it. So you can, do well by doing good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yep. Good.
Lots of considerations.
Cool.
So that's it. That's all I got.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first.
There you go.
Take the $50,000 in day one, open up your kids' RESPs, unless you're like 99.9% of the people that don't have $50,000
exactly.
in day one.
Exactly right.
Instead, just fund it over time.
That's right.
Yeah. All right.
Next time.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth, Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.